Good morning. Today's daf in Bava Basra's Kuf Yud Beis. We are on Kuf Yud Alef Amud Beis. Our discussion for today will be the husband inheriting his wife. The Mishnah taught us in the beginning of the parak. We started the parak some days ago. Parak started back on Daf Kuf Ches. Mishnah taught us that there are certain relationships in which there is going to be Yerusha. And there are mostly, for the most part, they're all family relationships, blood relationships. So a father to a son to his father, a daughter will inherit her father, the son will inherit his mother, etc., etc., with varying degrees of differences between them, but they, for the most part, are blood relatives. The Torah tells us a chiddush, the Torah doesn't say it explicitly, which is really going to be most of our daf today, because the Torah does not mention explicitly, but the Torah tells us a chiddush that when a husband marries a woman, when a man marries a woman, so if she predeceases him, so he will inherit her estate. Again, there's nowhere it says so explicitly in the Torah, but that's the halacha, and that's what the Mishnah taught us. Where the Mishnah says, "Aisha yishto," that a husband inherits his wife. It is one of those types of Yerushas which is one directional. It only works where the husband inherits the estate of his wife, but the wife does not inherit the estate of the husband in the event that he predeceases her. Hence the ksuva, by the way. The ksuva is there to provide some sort of financial benefit for her in the event that he predeceases her, but that's ksuva. But in terms of Yerusha, she's not going to inherit him. It's only the other way around. So how do we know this? How do we arrive at this conclusion? Where in the Torah does it say so? So the simplest answer, of course, is that it doesn't say so in the Torah. And what we have is we have a drasha. But in the meantime, however, we have Torah Shabbat Peh. But in the meantime, however, the Gemara, as it is interested in doing so, would like to find this somewhere encrypted in the Torah, where the Gemara would like to darshan this out based on Pesukim. So yesterday we went through one possibility in terms of where it comes up from. It comes up in Parshas Pinchas, where the Torah subtly references the husband inheriting his wife, the She'iro, the other relative that's mentioned in the Torah, Zu Ishto. That's a reference to his wife. We pointed out that not everyone agrees with that. You go back to the beginning of the Perek. Some are of the opinion that She'iro Zu Aviv. It's the father, meaning that the father is going to inherit his son, which also is not explicitly mentioned in the Torah, but okay. So that was one way, that's one way that we had it yesterday. The Gemara now is going to bring another Braisa, and this is where we're starting today. It's the second wide line on the Amud, on Kuf Yud Alef Amud Beis, and the Gemara now is going to present us a Braisa, and the Braisa will learn it from the following Ditanya. The Gemara here introduces the Braisa. According to Rabbi Akiva, nothing new. Same thing that we said previously, and that is it's based on the Pesukim by Yerush Osa, which we pointed out at the end of yesterday's daf, just a couple lines up where we are in the Gemara. So it loosely references that the husband is going to inherit his wife. Yesterday we pointed out, Abai and Rava both pointed out, the Pesuk doesn't read that clearly. I'm not going to go through the Pesuk right now, but the Pesuk doesn't read that clearly. It doesn't really seem to indicate that. Debate between Rav and Abai that we saw yesterday, whether or not we're just going to rearrange the entire Pesuk in order to create this drush, or we're going to just simply cut out some letters in order to create this drush. But anyway, that was what we saw yesterday, and what we're learning now in the Braisa right now, that this is the opinion of Rabbi Akiva as well. Rabbi Akiva subscribes to this viewpoint. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, now the Braisa quotes the position of Rabbi Shmuel. Then to us, this is all going to be new. Meaning, this is now going to be, according to Rabbi Shmuel, the source in the Torah that teaches us that that a husband is going to inherit his wife. Okay. And by the way, the Rashman points out over here. Right, and I had a discussion, a post-op discussion yesterday. You know, the Gorin Mosifin, right? The cutting up of letters. It seems to be a little bit, it's unusual. It's an unusual way to darshan, right? So the Rashman points out over here is that when the Rabbi Shmuel's opening words are Eino Sarech, and if you look at the Rashman over here, he writes the Leisle Gorin Mosifin Vidarshan Umukala B'Sheru Zuav. He doesn't subscribe to this idea of Gorin Mosifin that we can cut out letters here and there in order to create a new word or a new meaning to the pasuk. And She'iro is a reference to the father. So in other words, according to Rabbi Shmuel, he doesn't subscribe to Gorin Mosifin. He doesn't say She'iro is a reference to one's wife, and so therefore what he has to do is he has to arrive at it from a different angle, from a different standpoint. Okay, now before we start with Rabbi Shmuel's position, so just a little bit of background information, a little bit of an introduction. I am really at the very end of the tail end of Sefer Bamidbar, Parshas Maaseh, and this is the last parak of Sefer Bamidbar. Vayikrevu Rosh Avos. I'll go through this quickly, but it's all important. It's really it's critical to understand what we're about to do together in the Gemara. Vayikrevu Rosh Avos l'mishpachas b'nei Gal b'nei Machir b'nei Menashe b'nei Mishpachas b'nei Yosef. Vayidaber l'fnei Moshe l'fnei Asim Rosh Avos l'fnei Yisrael. So now, basically, the heads of the tribes of Menashe are going over to Moshe, and they're going to lodge an official complaint. Okay, and they're going to have a very good point. You know, Moshe, you know, here's what you did. You gave all that land that was part of our tribe, and you gave it to the daughters of Slavchad. And they're entitled, meaning they're the Slavchad is a member of Menashe, and they're for sure entitled. But here comes the problem. But their point is as follows. These girls are going to get married, and they're going to marry a guy, and it's going to be a guy from another shevet, or at least it could be a guy from another shevet. And then what's going to end up happening is that that land now is going to leave our tribe, and it's going to go to another tribe. A taina. And you know, Yovel, by the way, Yovel keeps getting that, keeps bringing that land back to its ancestral rights. And again, if we have now the land going from one tribe to another, so even if, like, I'm just, you know, I'm adding a little bit more in the pasuk, but even if we were to buy the land from that tribe, but you know, eventually the land is just going to keep bouncing back to that tribe. So what are we supposed to do? So you, hopefully you know the answer, but here it comes. So Moshe says, "Al pi Hashem, this is what we're going to do." Kain mateh b'nei Yisrael dovrim. They're right. They're absolutely right. So zeh davar shitziv Hashem livnos lavchad lemor latov beinem tiyena lanashim ach lemishpachas mateh avim tiyena lanashim. So Moshe at this point in time, like, he was like a professional leader. So he says, you know, girls, you can marry whoever you want, but it's got to be someone within the shevet. Right. So whatever. He's been leading for a long time at this point in his life now. He knows how to talk to people. He says, okay. So in other words, no intermarriage. Now when we say intermarriage over here, you know, we're talking about the old fashioned intermarriage, meaning don't marry somebody from another tribe. Meaning it has such a different meaning nowadays. So don't marry somebody else from another tribe. You got to stay within. You got to stay within your own tribe. Velosi sov. Now I'm reading the psukim, and you'll hear it all in the Gemara today. But this is just a great introduction. Velosi sov nachla of Nei Yisrael mimata mata. And don't let the nachla, the word, the verb that's used is such an interesting verb, tisov, which means basically don't let it do its rounds. Okay. The don't let it bounce around from one tribe to another tribe. Mi matel mate ki ish benachlas mate avosav yidbuku b'nei Yisrael. That's way the lands could stay within every tribe. V'chol bas yereshes nachla mi matos b'nei Yisrael. You know, the daughter inherits the nachla from the tribe. So echam imishbachas mate avieti elisha. That means that the daughter is going to be inheriting whatever land is given to her, both by her mother and by her father. We already discussed this a day ago in the daf. Laman yirshu b'nei Yisrael ish nachlas avosav. V'losi sov. And again, repetition over here, but I'm not repeating. The Torah is repeating. And don't let the lands go make its round from one tribe to another tribe. Okay, I can. We almost finished the entire parak, but that's just a good introduction in terms of getting to where we need to in the Gemara today.
We'll go back to the original tribe, no?
It will go back. Well, no. In other words, if you're inheriting a land, so now it's your ancestral land, and if you're inheriting the land from another tribe, it's going to go back to you and your family. Okay. So, Rabbi Yishmael Omer. So, with all that in place, now we can turn to the Gemara and see this all inside. Ein otzarach. I don't need it. Meaning, again, the topic of discussion is how do I know that the land is going to be inherited from the wife to the husband? So he says, Enot Zarech, I don't need what we've had previously. I don't need Mosifim Vigorin, cutting Psukim. I don't need the Sheiro, Zu Ishto. I don't need any of that. Hari Omer, because take a look at the Psukim. And again, we already went through them. Yeah, now we're going to go through them quickly. Chol Bas Yereshes Nachlas Mimatos B'nei Yisrael La'echad Mimishbachas V'chulei. So first of all, the daughter. The daughter is going to be inheriting. Now, how's the daughter inheriting a land from some other tribe? So what the Gemara is now suggesting is, oh, I'll tell you how it's happening. It's because what happens is that her father married a woman from another tribe. That woman died. He inherited now the land. And now when he dies, that land is going to go to the daughter. So the Gemara says, "Besebas habala cuts of medaber." It's the reason why the land is being moved from one tribe to another is because it's going from the wife to the husband. Now again, I know the Torah doesn't explicitly say that; it's a little bit of conjecture, but that's what the Gemara is suggesting. V'omer, and the Gemara says that if that doesn't do it for you, I have another pasuk, same location in the Torah. V'lo sasiv nachla levnei Yisrael mimateh amateh. The Torah says, and I don't want the land to go rounding from one tribe to another tribe. And how is it going to go rounding from one tribe to another tribe? Presumably, because what's going to happen is the man's going to marry a woman, she's going to predecease him, the land's going to go to him. The Gemara says, and if that doesn't do it for you, I'll give you a third pasuk, same area, same parak. V'lo sisov nachla mimateh amateh acher. A third pasuk that tells us this idea. And the Gemara, and the Braisa still continues. And the Braisa says, and this doesn't do it all for you. So the Gemara says, I have a fourth pasuk. So Elazar, the son of Aaron, dies. This is in Sefer Yoshua. This is the end of Sefer Yoshua. And so Pinchas, the son of Elazar, buries his father. And where does he bury him? In a property that he owns. Now, how is Pinchas having property? And his father didn't have property. And how do you have property? So the Gemara now speculates, and the Gemara says, I'll tell you how it happened. It happened where Pinchas married a woman. She died before he did. He inherited her land. And that's how Pinchas got property. And that's how he was able to bury his father in this property.
So, does this imply that if none of his sons are married, Elazar wouldn't have any plot to get buried?
We'll see. V'omer. And the Gemara says, and again, this is all still the Braisa, and this is all still Rabbi Yishmael making his point that this is sources that tell us that a husband inherits his wife. V'omer. Uzgova leaded Yair. This is in Divrei Yamim. And these are Yotzei Mitzrayim. These are people who left Egypt. And Skov gives birth to Yair Vahilo, Esrim Vishalosh Arim, Baratz HaGilad. And Yair comes into Eretz Yisrael, and he has cities. 23 cities. V'chiminayin l'Yair Shalosh Hayal l'Skov. Where do you get those cities from? Meaning, how come Yair gets these cities? In other words, his father didn't have these cities? Like, what? How is that? So, so it must be that Yair married well. He did good for himself in marriage. He married a woman who had all these cities. She died before he did, and that's how he got all these cities. Okay, so where do we have right now? This is it. That's the end of the Braisa. We have Rabbi Yishmael telling us five different psukim, three from Parshas Maaseh, one from the end of Sefer Yoshua, one from Divrei Yamim, five different psukim, all seeming to indicate, and key word over here is indicate, all seeming to indicate that a husband will inherit his wife. So this is all Lashitas Rabbi Shmuel in terms of how we know that a husband inherits his wife. Now, you know how this is going to work because this is generally how it works. When you're bringing one pasuk to cite a source, that means that's all you need. If you're bringing five psukim in there, it means that you can be critical about each one of the psukim individually, and it's only through really the collection of all five do we really have a good case to make. And the Gemara Kedarka Bekardesh now wants to know what's wrong with each of the psukim in themselves. Maiva Omer, why did the Braisa, according to Rabbi Shmuel, have to cite pasuk after pasuk after pasuk to get to the same point? So the Gemara starts off like this: V'chi tema b'sibas aben kekapikra v'abal lo yaris. So maybe go back to the first pasuk that's quoted over here. I'm getting v'chol bas yareshes nachla mimateh b'nei Yisrael. We're talking about the inheritance of the children, and we're saying, well, you know what's going to happen is that the land is going to go from one tribe to another. So we speculated, Rabbi Shmuel, we speculated it's because the husband is inheriting his wife. The Gemara is saying no. It's very simple. In other words, the husband marries a woman from another tribe. She dies, and then the child is going to be inheriting. The child who is from what Shevet? Dan shaved, of course, because Shvatim followed the father. So the child is going to be inheriting the land of his mother. So it has nothing to do with the Yerusha of the husband of his wife. It has to do with the fact that she's going to die and it's going to go to the next generation, which means her son or her daughter, either way. But they are connected to the other tribe. And that's what the Torah is trying to tell us we don't want to happen. So Tashma. So the Gemara says that's why we have a second pasuk of Alo Sasov Nachla Livnei Yisrael Mimate Lamate. So that's why I have the second pasuk, which comes to tell me that don't let this happen. So it's, now again, it's repetitive, but what is it coming to tell us? That it's coming to tell us that the husband is inheriting a wife. V'chitim alav or alav b'lav aseh. The Gemara says, well, maybe the second pasuk is to formally present it as a lav. It is a negative prohibition. As the Rashman points out, if all we had was just simply the positive statement of you must marry within the tribe, so then we know that you're not allowed to marry outside the tribe, but that's only what's called in halacha a lav haba mechlal aseh. That is a negative prohibition, but only learned out from inference from a positive commandment. And lava ba mechala aseh has the status of an aseh. There's no punishment for violating it, meaning it's still, you're still violating Ratzon Hashem, but there's no punishment in violating it. So by the Torah lodging a formal lav, so now the Torah is telling us that you are violating a positive and a negative prohibition when you marry somebody outside from another tribe. So, but again, it doesn't necessarily prove to us that the husband inherits his wife. So Tashma, so the Gemara says that's why we have the third pasuk of lo sisov nachlami matala mata acher. The third pasuk, what is that coming to teach us? Again, you don't assume it's just repetition, although the Gemara in a moment will, but don't assume it's just repetition. It must be there to tell us that the husband could inherit his wife's property, and if he marries somebody from another shevet, so that allows the land to go from one tribe to another, and we don't want that. The Torah doesn't want that. So the Gemara says, V'chitim alav or alav v'shani alav v'aseh. And now the Gemara says, well, again, maybe no. Maybe that's not what the Torah is coming to tell us. Maybe the Torah is just simply repeating again and again, don't allow a land to go from one tribe to another. And how would that happen? Through the children. And as far as the repetition of the psukim, it's there to compound the lavim. It's not just, you're not just violating one lav, it's two lavim you're violating. And it's also you're in violation of an aseh as well. And in terms of compound lavim, it's not generally the move the Gemara likes to go to. In terms of why is the Torah repeating itself? Oh, multiple lavim. But when you got nothing, when there's no other reason why the Torah is saying it, so it must be then that it must be because of compound lavim. Okay, but anyway, so we don't have right now at this point in time an absolute proof that the husband inherits his wife. So Tashma. So the Gemara says that's why you bring in the psukim regarding Elazar and Pinchas. Elazar ben Aaron meis v'chule. So from there you see that how did Pinchas get that land? Again, the Gemara is making a leap, an assumption that it must be that Pinchas married a woman from another tribe, she died, and that's how she got the land. V'chitem Elazar hu denasif isso meis v'yarsa Pinchas. So the Gemara says, okay, but as long as we're speculating, you know what could have happened? It could have been as easy as this. Elazar married a woman from another tribe, and she died, and not that Elazar inherits, but you know who inherits? The child, meaning Pinchas inherited. So in other words, it doesn't come through Yerusha Sabah, but it rather comes through Yerusha Saman. So the Gemara says, Tashma. So the Gemara says, and now we have the Pasuk in Divrei Hayamim. Uzgov ha-lira yair v'chitei ma'asamnami ha'cha hava, ha'chahu. And again, look, as long as we're speculating, we could say the same thing. That Skov didn't have property, but Yair did have property. And how did he get the property? So again, we could suggest, like we suggested earlier, that it could be that Skov married a woman from another tribe, and when she died, so the child inherited all that property. So the Gemara says, Im King Trey Kri Lamali. So the Gemara says, yeah, but then what would be the need for the two psukim? A pasuk in Shoftim, a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, meaning then it would be redundant, and what's the point of having a redundancy? Although, to be fair, the Gemara just said that the redundancy regarding the Torah is lav or lav v'shnei lavim, meaning the Gemara over there explained the redundancy, but I guess when it comes to pasuk in Yehoshua and a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, we're not going to generate any lavim from those psukim. Those are psukim from Nach, not from Torah. So then the only plausible explanation must be that the repetition of the psukim are coming to tell us that the husband does in fact inherit his wife. Okay, so as much as Rabbi Shmuel doesn't need the Goren and Mosifin, the cutting of psukim, and he doesn't darshan Sheiro as being Zuishto, but to be quite frank, it's not that simple in terms of how he arrived at the conclusion that the husband inherits his wife. Okay, but there we are. So in other words, multiple different ways in terms of arriving at the conclusion that a husband inherits his wife. The Gemara still has a couple of like end notes on this last brisa that we just learned together. Amar le Rav Papa l'Abaye, mi mai. So Rav Papa says to Abaye, how do I know? How do you know? Maybe let's go back to an assumption that a husband does not inherit his wife. Now, as far as the Pesukim is concerned, so how is the land moving from tribe to tribe? Like we suggested earlier, it's not because the husband is inheriting his wife, but rather because the son is inheriting his mother, who came from a different tribe. V'yair. Now, as far as Yair, we asked the question: how do you get all that land? You know, inheriting is one way to get land. You know, there's another way to get land as well. It's called purchasing. You buy land. The Yair does Zav and Mizben. So it could be that Yair bought all the land. And Pinchas Nami does Zav and Mizben. And Pinchas, as far as we're concerned, maybe he also. Meaning, not only was he a Kohen, but also, what's it called? A bit of a real estate mogul. and he's buying land. So Amale. Pinchas is of Mizben, so to that suggestion that maybe Pinchas bought land, meaning as far as the suggestion read by Yair, okay, you could be right, but as far as Pinchas is concerned, untenable, simply untenable that Pinchas would be buying land. Why is it so untenable? Because consider that we're talking about in Eretz Yisrael. So when you buy land, again, it's not really buying land, it's really leasing land, and you know it's going to go back in Yovel. And remember, we know what Pinchas did with the land. He buried his father in that land. And so now, let's consider. It's really, right. When you think about it, it's really strange. That now means that Pinchas is going to be burying his father in leased property. And then when the lease is over, the property is going to return. And then what is he supposed to do with his father's remains? Okay. So it therefore must mean that the suggestion that he purchased the land is simply an implausible suggestion, and we have to go back to Yerusha. It has to be an inheritance. So I didn't finish the line. V'nim tzadik kavur bekever shena shalom. And it comes out now that Elazar is being buried in a land that doesn't belong to him. And the Gemara, without citing any psukim or any, you know, any source, any, you know, brisa source material, the Gemara says that can't be. In other words, you can't be buried in a land that doesn't belong to you. There clearly is an idea that there has to be an ownership of land that you're buried in. But again, to us, that's not so strange. Consider the first burial that we saw in the Torah, right, by Avram Avinu, meaning the Torah makes a big deal about purchasing land that you're going to be buried in. So you can't be buried in borrowed land or in leased land. It has to be land that you own. Okay. So Ella Ema, so the Gemara says, okay, so that suggestion that Pinchas bought the land, so you're right. It's an implausible suggestion, it's an untenable suggestion. But the Gemara says, but you know what? I can come up with a number of other ways in which Pinchas got land, even though his father didn't have the land. And how would that be? Ella Ema, the Nafalem is Techaramim. The way that he got the land is through Stecherem. Now Stecherem over here can mean one of a couple of things. It can mean either that or maybe you don't, but in the Gemara in Erchin, so you could dedicate your field as Cherem. Now, Stecharamim can have one of two recipients. It can either go to the Kohanim, or it can go to the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, and it's a machlokus in the Gemara in Erchin, right, my memory is not perfectly clear, but I'm going on memory. There's a machlokus over there regarding whether Stam Cherem is to the Kohanim or whether it's to the Beis HaMikdash. But, whatever. For our purposes right now, all we need to know is that Cherem, dedication of land, can go, under certain circumstances, can go to the Kohanim. So, if that's true, so then Pinchas can get the land through that, through Stei Cherem. Could also mean, in our Gemara Stei Cherem, like we discussed a couple of days ago in the Daf, which is that if you have a ancestral land that you're Makdish and somebody else redeems it, so what happens in the Yovel year? It doesn't return back to the owner, but rather it goes to the Kohanim and the Yovel year. And that's what also the Gemara can mean in terms of how Pinchas got his hand on some lands. Either way, what the Gemara is saying very simply is it can very well happen that Pinchas has land that he did not inherit from his mother, or that he did not inherit from his wife. And so, once again, the proof is not absolute. It's not a foolproof indication that a husband inherits his wife. Okay. Let's continue. Amar Abaye. Now, the Rashbam points out that this line of the Gemara is going back to what we discussed yesterday, meaning we are, for the most part, done with our discussion regarding, not really, but at least for now, we're done with the discussion of what is the source in the Torah that a husband inherits his wife. That's the halacha. A husband inherits his wife. It's just a question of where is it coming from. So, basically, we've had, over the course of our Gemara, three different basic sources in terms of where it comes from. Either it comes from the word She'ero in Parshas Pinchas when dealing with the Yerusha, and again debatable, but one opinion is She'ero Zu Ishto, that a husband inherits his wife. Another possibility is V'yirei Shosa, also back in the Parshas Pinchas, another veiled indication that a husband inherits his wife, or what we just went through, which was admittedly very complicated, and that is the source of Rabbi Shmuel, where most of the psukim at the end of Sefer Bamidbar would seem to indicate that it is not indicate. The Torah says very clearly, it is prohibited for a man to marry a woman from another tribe, and the reason why is because, and now we're filling in the blank, because the husband's going to inherit her in the event that she dies before he does, and that's how land is going to go from one tribe to another. Although, admittedly, that part is speculation. It could very well be that the land is going to go not through the wife to the husband, from the wife to her son. Okay.
5-week sources don't help.
I agreed. In other words, it's Rabbi Shmuel's. It's complicated. Agreed. But he didn't like the Goren of Mosifin. He didn't like the cutting up of Psukim. He didn't agree with She'ero being Ishto. Okay. I hear. All right, so we go back to something we discussed yesterday, and that was a daughter inheriting the land from her parents. And mom is from one tribe and dad from another tribe. Now, they shouldn't have gotten married. I think at this point in time we know that. But they did, and now she's going to be inheriting property, and she's going to be and it'll be different properties from different tribes. So now the Gemara asks a question. So Amar Abaye, Sof Sof, Ha Kemit Akra Nachla Mishifta, Di Ime Lishifta Da Abba. So the Gemara says, look, when all said and done, meaning just by her existence, meaning with the daughter, just by her existence now, land is going to be moved from one tribe to another tribe. So, in other words, even before she gets to the point of marrying somebody from another tribe, which she shouldn't do, but even before that point in time, just by her being in this world, means that land is going to move from one to another. So, what would be so bad about her marrying somebody from another tribe? Anyway, she's involved in moving land from one to another, from one tribe to another. So, Umi Mai V'Dilma Shani Hasam Shikvar Huzba. So the Gemara says, well, maybe the land already moved from one tribe to another tribe. So in other words, it's not that it will happen, but perhaps it already did happen. No, he says, I'm not ready to entertain that. Meaning at this point in time, we're talking about a case where she is not yet married, and she has a choice of who to marry, and her parents are still alive. And again, what's in play now, or what's in place, is that when her parents do die, she's going to be inheriting land from different tribes. So the Gemara says that, look, if we're talking about where the land already came to her, so then I understand the pasuk can be entertained from two perspectives. Either land moving as a result of the son, or land moving as a result of the husband. So the Gemara says, but if we're talking about a case where she didn't inherit the land as of yet from her parents, from her mother and her father, ki mitzav ala acher mimishpachas matei avia mayhava ha mitakra nachla mishifta dime lishifta da'aba. So the Gemara says, but still, let's say she married somebody within her own tribe. So she did good. But still, when all said and done, in the event that when her parents die, she's going to be inheriting both properties, both her father's property and her mother's property. So her father's property is still within the tribe. her mother's property is from another tribe. So the Gemara says, so what would you expect her now to do? Meaning, whatever she does anyway is not going to solve any problem. So the Gemara says, the man stimen la lagavre, davu mishifta davu, v'ime mishifta d'ime. So the Gemara says, well, what you could do is at least you can keep status quo. So in other words, you're right. And Achinami, what's going to end up happening is that there will be a change of property from one tribe to another upon the death of her parents. But if she marries somebody who has the same yichus as her, where mom is from one tribe and dad is from another tribe, and parenthetically, I didn't make this point clear, but let me do so now. Meaning, if you're not allowed to marry somebody from another tribe, so how can you have the parents being from different tribes? But that's easy, though. Meaning, consider the fact that this was only introduced to the Jewish people at the end of Sefer Bamidbar. So in other words, you had tons of marriages of people who were from different tribes, presumably. Meaning, no one kept within tribe prior to this point in time. So you can have, you know, many people who are coming into Eretz Yisrael who are from different tribes. And now, basically, what we're trying to do is we're trying to explore now, well, how do you... Well, you can't stop the Yerusha from happening now, but how can at least we minimize it? So now what the Gemara is doing is that the suggestion is, well, look, if you're a woman and you know your parents are from different tribes and you know that now they're coming to you, so there's nothing you can do to stop that, but what you can do is you can marry a guy who also has the same yichus as you, and so at least now it'll keep everything status quo. To a certain degree. Okay, so ihachi, so hi la'echem mishbachas matei avia v'ima mi ba'ilei. So the Gemara says, so then if that's what she is supposed to do, and that is not find a guy with the same yichus as her, so then the Torah could have been a lot clearer about that. So the Torah could have said, hi la'echem mishbachas matei avia v'ima. Is what the Torah should have said. So, So the Gemara says, yeah, well, if that's true, then I might have suggested, I might have entertained the idea that it really could have been reversed. Meaning that as long as we have the tribes represented, even though the mom and dad are from those two tribes, but from, you know, the inverse. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, that's what the Torah is coming to teach us, that not only should you, meaning if you're a woman who's going to inherit property from two different tribes, not only should you marry somebody with the same yichus as you, but also a match, a perfect match, where his mother is going to be from the same tribe as your mother, and his father should be from the same tribe as your father. Okay. So fine. Tanya. Yeah? Okay. Let's do a little bit more. Besiba Saben... I'm sorry, Tanya. Besipas Aben V'Tanya Besipas Abal. So the Gemara here is going to introduce us to Brises, and these two Brises, again, are going to echo what we discussed yesterday in terms of how is it possible the land can go from one tribe to another? So it can go in one of two ways. Again, we're talking about a case where the woman had property, and it can now do its rounds. And again, the word Siba means do its rounds in this context, meaning jump from one tribe to another, either through the husband or can jump through the son. So Tanya b'siba tzaven, Tanya says about Tanya b'siba tzaben v'lo sasiv lo sisov nachla livnei yisram matel matei b'siba tzaben akas medaber. So one Brisa clearly is understanding that we're talking about how is it jumping through the son, meaning a husband and wife get married. And the husband comes from one tribe, the wife came from another tribe, and now what's going to happen is that the land is jumping because when mom dies, the son's inheriting it. So, Ata Omer B'Siba Tzabeno, Eino Le B'Siba Tzabal. So the Gemara says, well, how do you know that? Kishu Omer V'Losis of Nachla Mimata Lamata Acher Hare B'Siba Tzabal Amor. Because I have another pasuk. Again, we go back to the beginning of today's shir, where I read through all the pasukim. I have another pasuk that talks about land jumping. Well, what's that other pasuk talking about land jumping? That must be talking about where the husband is inheriting his wife's property. So, that's talking about Sipa Saban, where the son is going to be inheriting his mother's property, and that is another way in which land can jump from one tribe to another. Okay. We'll pause over here. I mean, it's kind of in the middle, but tomorrow we'll start with the top of Kuf Yud Gimel. We'll start with Tanya Idach. Okay, just as a quick recap. So again, a husband inherits his wife's property. In the event that she predeceases him, so he inherits the property. That part, we can say definitively. That's the halacha. That's clear. What isn't clear is, where does the Torah say that? Where's the source for that in the Torah? So that's the complexity of the Gemara, and that's what we spent yesterday and today doing. Either She'ero, or V'yirish Asah, or a collection of the Psukim at the end of Sefer Bamidbar, to put it succinctly. There are problems with each one of the sources, but and those are the details of the daf, but that's basically what we learned together. And then a discussion at the end of today's daf regarding what if in the event you know, as a woman, you know that your parents are coming from two different tribes, and you know that eventually you're going to be inheriting from two different tribes. So you marry somebody, so what can you do to prevent it? So basically what the Gemara says, what you could do to not prevent it, but to minimize it, is marry somebody with the same yichus as you do, so that way everything stays in the status quo position, at least for this next generation. Just as a little bit of a foreshadow for what we're learning up ahead, this prohibition of marrying somebody from another tribe is only for those coming into Eretz Yisrael and that generation. Later generations, they were allowed to. Well, that's coming up later in the Gemara. Not tomorrow's daf, but that's coming up later.